This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
34 clergy and faith groups from Victoria and across Canada have signed a statement of concern about the proposed federal bill that makes buying and advertising sex illegal. The statement calls Bill C-36 immoral, primarily because it does nothing to advance the welfare of sex workers and actually increases the potential for dangerous situations to occur. The so-called Protection of Communities and Exploited Persons Act is under consideration in a special House of Commons Justice Committee hearing. The bill was tabled after the Supreme Court of Canada struck down existing prostitution laws 7 months ago because they violated the Charter of Rights of Sex Workers.
I spoke earlier this week with Reverend Nancy Ford, who is one of the clergy from Victoria, BC, who signed that statement of concern. Here's the interview.
The statement begins by making it clear that concerns remain about what you described as the commodification of sex and the exploitation and abuse of vulnerable women and men who are sex workers. Tell us more about that.
One of our concerns is that we do stand for, as clergy, we stand for a particular view and understanding of the nature of marriage and sexual relationships and see that as a normative place for sexual relations. However, we do recognize that within society that the commodification of sex in our economy and the exploitation and abuse of vulnerable people, both men and women, who are sex workers, is a major issue. It is very concerning to us because most of these people are very marginalized. And research shows, including work done in this general area on the island, that at least 25% to 30% of sex trade workers are in fact very marginalized.
Now, there are four general reasons for the group's non-support of Bill C-36. And the first one is infringement on human rights.
If you look at the human rights legislation, you will see that there is the right of every person to health, safety, and life. And those are being infringed of the sex workers because those human rights are not being upheld within the proposed legislation. And, the Supreme Court of Canada had already set this up. They unanimously struck down the communicating provision on the basis that it violated Section 7 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And then subsequent to that, Justice Himmel's Ontario Court ruling stated that Canada's criminal code provisions deprive sellers of their security of the person and liberty interests and increase their violent victimization. So those are a couple of the ways in which the courts have come to that, not response to this legislation, but to a response to legislation that is very similar in Bill C-36. And some of the research shows that the proposed amendment will further undermine the capacity of street-based sellers to keep safe. And the researchers note Aboriginal sellers in particular, since they are disproportionately represented on the street. So those are some of the things that we've been looking at when that statement was made. And our basic comment is that this legislation simply reinscribes the old provisions in different language and will again result in immediate legal challenges. And in the time frame that that would take, it does not further or assist in the welfare of sex workers, but again, as I've said, continues to marginalize them and open them up to the threat of violence.
Tell us more about the risks of violence, because that's the second major concern that's listed in the letter of concern.
With the new legislation, if you look at some of the research and some of the stories that I've heard, if there is a violent incident between a sex worker and someone else in the practice of their work, only about 20% may contact the police for some action. So if you look at that statistic, then, and you look at a legislation that's going to further criminalize people, there will be less engagement with the police, and the safety is even more diminished. And what I hear from the street is that people are feeling quite at risk, more so than they have ever before, with the potential of this legislation. And I think we need to be very careful of doing that as we criminalize behaviors that force them to go underground, which is not an unknown pattern, and we continue to marginalize both economically and in this way those people who have very little to add to their lives, such as simple things as housing, food, health care.
There was also a lack of consultation.
The lack of consultation, there was a window of approximately a month where sex workers could go and respond to a fairly inaccessible questionnaire on the internet. And then I believe there was a conference call consultation. When you look at the most vulnerable people, information about this and access to that kind of consultation is pretty limited. And so, but, and it was also a limited time frame. So there really hasn't been any consultation, really, except through the research that has been carried out by a number of universities, a number of people, including folk from our own University of Victoria, who have done the research, but there was just no access, no reasonable access for these folk. And the concept of looking at alternative places for what they have learned and how they are managing sex trade in their own jurisdictions has been something that was given lip service to, has not been really given the attention it deserves.
The statement of concern also mentions underlying economic and social conditions. Tell us more about that.
What we find with a fairly high percentage of sex trade workers is that there are exacerbating circumstances. Often it begins with poverty. Another piece may be addiction. Another piece is the whole question of a history of abuse already in their story without resources to look at healing the issues that have arisen out of that. We have a situation in our province where the welfare rates are egregious given the cost of living in our province. There's been little movement in the last 12 years to raise the rates to a reasonable level. So what we have are people who often have no secure housing, even with the great work that's been done across the province in terms of finding low-income housing. It still isn't enough. We also have a criminalization and a moralistic attitude towards the dynamics of addiction, rather than recognizing that it in fact is an illness which can be treated. So there's a moralization and a lack of resources for that. And these things add on to each other. So if we have, for example, a single mom who has 1 to 2 children, who has no income coming in from the father of the children, and has very little marketable skills, there is no provision for adequate child care so that this woman can go to school or find work. So there are very few alternatives left. And so trying to be a mother and trying to figure out child care and trying to get access to appropriate housing, it all comes down to an economic lack thereof. And also what happens is, and I have spoken with social workers from the University of British Columbia, who tell the stories of seeing mums with kids in their office saying, "We can't afford to look after our children. They will get something to eat if we put them into care." So the children in all of this are tremendously the ones who lose, who do not have economic support. The moms do not have economic support in order to find other ways of economic employment. And there aren't the resources, especially for women, in terms of affordable and accessible addictions treatment. And so they also suffer from the stigma of that addiction is a moral issue rather than a health issue. So those are some of the things that underlie what's going on. If you begin life with a low self-concept due to trauma in early life, it is almost like setting up, and that is being continually criminalized. Being poor is being criminalized through these kinds of legislations.
What has the response been to this statement of concern from either the public, the media, or parishioners, and anyone else?
I have, when the group of us came together and put this out, put the letter together, put it out in consultation with PEERS, which is a sex worker support and nurture agency in Victoria, I have been absolutely, and I'll use a British term here, gobsmacked by the amazingly positive response. And that has come from the public. That's come from parishioners. I've had people come up to me, all age groups, from people in their 80s to people in their 20s, saying, "This is so important. We have to do this. Good for you for leading the charge on this in terms of the church." The public, even my own physician, commented very positively to me after seeing the article. And I must say that the media has been open to hearing church voices, clergy voices, people of faith talk about the injustice about that. So for me, there really is, there's a resonance for people in the community about this issue. And I found it initially surprising, but as I've listened to what they've had to say, there is a deep awareness and a deep caring there that is just delightful, and I feel very honored to have been involved in those conversations. And I'm just delighted to see this because it speaks to the essence of what it is to be a Christian, because Christ said, "Don't let anyone harm even the littlest ones." And littlest ones can mean not just age, but those who are marginalized. And this is a very powerful thing from my perspective.
Reverend Nancy Ford, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
Reverend Nancy Ford is Deacon to the City, based at Christ Church Cathedral in Victoria, British Columbia. You can find Christ Church online at christchurchcathedral.bc.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.